This is Sheila Winstead speaking on behalf of Rolls Oconee Historical Society. A little column about lunchboxes appeared in the March 29, 2003 edition of Yesteryears, part of the Grand Forks Herald. It was written by Ed Hayes. Not until the last few years of active duty at my newspaper did I ever tote a lunchbox. Lunchbox? Well, yes, although I guess a cooler or ice chest would be the proper nouns in this instance. Definitely the receptacle was more substantial in measure than the lunchboxes seen around schools in the 1930s. Come to think of it, the young people of my era and frill-free neighborhood saw very few of these luxury items. For one thing, most of us children lived within walking distance of the three schools, one public, two parochial, and sallied home for lunch. Only an uncommon circumstance or severe weather dictated that a child leave the house in the morning with takeout for his or her midday nourishment. In any event, some of the lunchboxes that we did or did not see, whichever the case, are currently treasured keepsakes at the Smithsonian Institution. Matter of fact, the Washington-based Cornucopia of Nostalgia has just hit the road with this particular exhibit, aiming to carry it to the masses for the next 3 years. And remember, that was in 2003. Oh, sure, that should really kick up pleasant memory dust across the country, but I have a question. Was it possible in some way for the Smithsonian specialists to sustain any of the historic aromas of the contents of those colorful containers? Boy, the smells. That's what I remember so strongly, and not necessarily so fondly. Picture this, a blizzard raging outside our buttoned-up two-story furnace-heated school. Inside at the stroke of high noon, the students unseal their boxes and bundles of lunches at their desks. The resulting explosion, the abrupt releasing of gases from all those bananas, sardines, hard-boiled eggs, and all that cheese, salami, and whatnot, including peanut butter, could just about blow out the windows. I bet even the church windows across the alley rattled. For my two brothers and me, Mom usually wrapped our sandwiches and sweets in leftover bread wrappers, adding some fruit, then bundled up each lunch in old newspaper, tied with recycled string. This, remember, was way before the big bang of school cafeterias and hot lunches. It would have been simpler for Mom to use leftover brown paper bags. In later years, I often brown bagged it to work, but those sacks weren't so freely dispensed at the grocery before the war. Which brings up another question. Has the Smithsonian reserved a section in its traveling exhibit for brown paper bags and for housewives' wicker baskets? Something else I recall. I know it's only a small thing, but I can still see Mom taking up a crayon and writing our names on our lunches to prevent mix-ups after they were stored in cloakrooms, or to thwart some ragamuffin from sneaking off with one of her poor little boy's brown Schwager sandwich, cake and apple. In those days there were, and still are I dare say, more than a few hungry children on the sniff and prowl. The writer of that column, Ed Hayes, was born around 1925. He had retired from the Orlando Sentinel. That year of birth is the same as my father's. It seems Ed went to a city school much bigger than the country school my dad went to in Pine Creek. My dad didn't say much about his lunches, but I know his mother made bread often, and they always had butter on hand. Molasses was often on the sandwiches. I've heard of kids carrying their lunch in empty lard pails. By my generation, school lunches were provided at all schools. If you have memories of your own school lunches, write them down for your descendants. The Rolls Oconee Museum would be happy to have a copy too. Thanks to Wild 102 for this time to tell our Coney stories.